Welcome to December 14th, 2023's study, the year 2023 of the Common Era, December 14th, and the time is 15:38 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again, and we have a lot of reading. We've got to get going, and hopefully it's possible, but I don't know if we'll get it all done. Radiocarbon dating has been used. This is from the Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 2, Paragraph 2. To determine the start of the reign of Amos I as between 1570 to 1544 BCE. An average of 1557 BCE, and 7 years earlier than the conventional date for the beginning of Amos I's reign, which is 1550. While radiocarbon dating is not accurate enough to date on its own merit, this appears to confirm conventional dates. Astronomically dating the reign of Amenhotep I, we adopted the year 1550 BCE as the year Amos I began to reign, and backwards calculation from 1517 BCE, the ninth year of the pharaoh Amenhotep I, offers 1525 BCE as the end of Pharaoh Amos I's reign. He rules 25 years according to Manetho. So that calculation gives us 1550 roughly for Amos I. In Trojan War, I think we place it at 1551 or late in 1552. But the radiocarbon cannot on its own merit date anything. It can only be used to confirm dates. That's the way radiocarbon is, as we showed with the example of the very young plant that was dated as 1,000 years old because there was old carbon that didn't have much of the radioactive carbon in it that made the plant look very, very old, because young plants typically have more of the radiocarbon before it dies away. When the plant stops taking it in, the radiocarbon decays. That's how they date things. That's all for the crucible for today, and our proverb is from Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10. Little children, a capable wife who can find, her value is far more than that of corals. The value of corals again, which I found was very real in my case when I learned about coral calcium as an edible food supplement, which is also a food because it's a plant. Coral is a plant that grows under the ocean. 2 Samuel 13, and it came about after such things that Absalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, fell in love with her. And it was so distressing to Amnon that he fell sick on account of Tamar, his sister, because she was a virgin. And it was difficult in the eyes of Amnon to do anything at all to her. Now Amnon had a companion whose name was Jehonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jehonadab was a very wise man. So he said to him, "Why are you, the son of the king, so downcast as this morning by morning? Will you not tell me?" At this Amnon said to him, "With Tamar, the sister of Absalom, my brother, I am in love." Upon that, Jehonadab said to him, "Lie down on your bed and play sick, and your father will certainly come to see you, and you must say to him, 'Please let Tamar, my sister, come in and give me bread as a patient, and she will have to make the bread of consolation under my eyes in order that I may see it, and I shall have to eat from her hand.'" Accordingly, Amnon lay down and played sick, and so the king came in to see him. Then Amnon said to the king, "Please let Tamar, my sister, come in and bake two heart-shaped cakes under my eyes, that I may take bread as a patient from her hand." At that, David sent to Tamar at the house, saying, "Go, please, to the house of Amnon, your brother, and make the bread of consolation for him." So Tamar went to the house of Amnon, her brother, while he was lying down. Then she took the flour dough and kneaded it and made the cakes under his eyes and cooked the heart-shaped cakes. Finally, she took the deep pan and poured it out before him. But Amnon refused to eat and said, "How have everybody go out from me?" Then everybody went out from him. Amnon now said to Tamar, his sister, She was the sister of Absalom. Bring the bread of consolation to the interior room that I may take it as a patient from your hand. If we look at the beginning, Absalom was the brother of Tamar, right? So Tamar took the heart-shaped cakes that she had made and brought them into Amnon, her brother, in the interior room. And when she came near for him to eat, he at once grabbed hold of her and said to her, "Come, lie down with me, my sister." However, she said to him, "No, my brother, do not humiliate me, for it is not usual to do that way in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful folly. And I, where shall I cause my reproach to go? And you will become like one of the senseless men in Israel. And now speak, please, to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." And he did not consent to listen to her voice, but used strength superior to hers and humiliated her and lay down with her. And Amnon began hating her with a very great hatred, because the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. So that Amnon said to her, "Get up, go away." At this she said to him, "No, my brother, for this badness in sending me away is greater than the other that you have done with me." And he did not consent to listen to her. With that he called his attendant who waited upon him and said, "Send this person away from me, please, to the outside and lock the door behind her." Now upon her there was a striped robe, for that was the way the daughters of the king, the virgins, used to dress, with sleeveless coats. So his waiter proceeded to lead her clear outside, and he locked the door behind her. Then Tamar placed ashes upon her head, and the striped robe that was upon her she ripped apart, and she kept her hands put upon her head, and went walking away, crying as she walked. At this Absalom, her brother, said to her, "Was it Amnon, your brother, that happened to be with you? And now my sister keeps silent." He's your brother. They were half brother, half sister. "Do not set your heart on this matter." And Tamar began to dwell while being kept from association with others at the house of Absalom, her brother. And King David himself heard about all these things, and he became very angry. And Absalom did not speak with Amnon, either bad or good, for Absalom hated Amnon over the fact that he had humiliated Tamar, his sister. And it turned out after 2 full years that Absalom came to have sheep shearers at Baal Hazor, which is close by Ephraim, and Absalom proceeded to invite all the sons of the king. So Absalom came into the king and said, "Here now, your servant has sheep shearers. Let the king go, please, and also his servants with your servant." But the king said to Absalom, "No, my son, do not let all of us go, please, that we may not be a burden upon you." Although he kept urging him, he did not consent to go, but blessed him. Finally, Absalom said, "If not you, let Amnon, my brother, go with us, please." At this the king said to him, "Why should he go with you?" And Absalom began to urge him, so that he sent Amnon and all the sons of the king with him. Then Absalom commanded his attendants, saying, "See, please, that just as soon as Amnon's heart is in a merry mood with wine, and I shall certainly say to you, strike down Amnon, you must then put him to death. Do not be afraid. Have not I myself commanded you? Be strong and prove yourselves to be valiant men." And Absalom's attendants proceeded to do to Amnon just as Absalom had commanded. And all the other sons of the king began to rise up and mount each one his mule and take to flight. And it came about that while they were on the way, the report itself came to David, saying, "Absalom has struck down all the sons of the king, and not one of them has been left over." At this the king got up and ripped his clothes apart and laid upon the earth, and all his servants were standing by with it, their garments ripped apart. However, Jehonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, "Do not let my lord think that it is all the young men, the sons of the king, that they have put to death, for it is Amnon alone that has died, because at the order of Absalom it has occurred as something appointed from the day that he humiliated Tamar, his sister. And now do not let my lord the king take to his heart the word saying all the king's sons themselves have died. But it is Amnon alone that has died. Meantime, Absalom went running away. Later the young man, the watchman, raised his eyes and saw, and look, there were many people coming from the road behind him by the mountainside. At this, Jehonadab said to the king, look, the king's sons themselves have come in. In accord with the word of your servant, so it has taken place. And it came about that as soon as he finished speaking, here the king's sons themselves came in. And they began to raise their voice and weep, and even the king and all his servants wept with a very great weeping. As for Absalom, he ran off that he might go to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. And David continued to mourn over his son all the days. As for Absalom, he ran off and made his way to Geshur, and he came to be there 3 years. Finally, the soul of David the king longed to go out to Absalom, for he had comforted himself concerning Absalom concerning Amnon, because he was dead. That's the end of 2 Samuel 13. And Jeremiah 48, for Moab. This is what Jehovah of armies, the God of Israel, has said. Woe to Nebo, for she has been despoiled. Kiriathaim has been put to shame, has been captured. The secure height has been put to shame and been put in terror. No more is there any praise of Moab. In Heshbon they have thought out against her a calamity. Come, men, and let us cut her off from being a nation. You too, O madmen, should keep silent. After you there walks a sword. There is the sound of an outcry from Horonaim, a despoiling and great breaking down. Moab has been broken down. Her little ones have caused a cry to be heard. For on the way up to Luhith, it is with weeping that one goes up. There is a weeping, for on the way down from Horonaim, there is a distressing outcry over the breakdown that people have heard. Take to flight, provide escape for your souls, and you should become like a juniper tree in the wilderness, because your trust is in your works and in your treasures. You yourself will also be captured. And Chemosh will certainly go forth into exile, his priests and his princes at the same time. And the despoiler will come in on every city. And there will be no city that can make its escape. And the low plain will certainly perish, and the level land be annihilated. A thing that Jehovah has said. Give a road mark to Moab, you people, for at the falling in ruins she will go forth, and her very cities will become a mere object of astonishment, with no one dwelling in them. Cursed be the one that is carrying out the mission of Jehovah neglectfully, and cursed be the one that is holding back his sword from blood. The Moabites have been at ease since their youth, and they are keeping undisturbed on their dregs, and they have not been emptied from one vessel into another vessel, and into exile they have not gone. That is why their taste has stood still within them, and their very scent has not been changed. Therefore, look, there are days coming, is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will send to them vessel tilters, and they will certainly tilt them, and their vessels they will empty out, and their large jars they will dash to pieces. And the Moabites will have to be ashamed of Chemosh, just as those of the house of Israel have become ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. How dare you people say we are mighty men, and men of vital energy for the war? Moab has been despoiled, and one has gone up against her own cities, and their choice young men themselves have gone down to the slaughtering, is the utterance of the king, whose name is Jehovah of armies. The disaster on the Moabites is near to come, and their very calamity is actually hurrying up very much. All those round about them will have to sympathize with them, even all those knowing their name. Say, you people, how the rod of strength has been broken, the staff of beauty. Get down from glory and sit down in thirst, O inhabitress of the daughter of Dibon, for the despoiler of Moab has come up against you. He will actually bring your fortified places to ruin. Stand still and look out the way. Look out for the way itself, O inhabitress of Aroer. Ask him that is fleeing and her that is making her escape. Say, what has been brought about? Moab has been put to shame, for she has been struck with terror. Howl and cry out. Tell in Arnon, O man, that Moab has been despoiled, and judgment itself has come to the land of level country, to Holon and to Jahaz. And against Mephaath, and against Dibon, and against Nebo, and against Beth Diblathaim, and against Kiriathaim, and against Beth-Gamel, and against Beth-Meon, and against Kirioth, and against Bozrah, and against all the cities of the land of Moab, those far away and those near. The horn of Moab has been cut down, and his own arm has been broken, is the utterance of Jehovah. Make him drunk, O men, for he has put on great ears against Jehovah himself, and Moab has slapped around in his vomit, and he has become an object of ridicule, even he himself. And did not Israel become a mere object of ridicule to you, or was he found among outright thieves? For you would shake yourself just as often as you spoke against him. Leave the cities and reside on the crag, you inhabitants of Moab, and become like the dove that makes its nest in the regions of the mouth of the hollow. We have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very haughty, of his highness and of his pride and of his haughtiness and of the loftiness of his heart. I myself have known his fury, is the utterance of Jehovah, and that is not the way it will be. His empty talk they will not actually do in just that way. That is why it is over Moab that I shall howl, and for Moab in his entirety I shall cry out. For the men of Kir-Haraz one shall moan. With more than the weeping for Jazer I shall weep for you, O vine of Sibma. Your own flourishing shoots have crossed over the sea. To the sea, to Jazer they have reached, upon your summer fruitage and upon your grape gathering. The despoiler himself has fallen, and rejoicing and joyfulness have been taken away from the orchard and from the land of Moab, and from the wine presses I have caused the wine itself to cease. No one will be doing the treading with shouting. The shouting will be no shouting. From the city, from the cry in Heshbon, clear to Elealeh, clear to Jahaz, they have given forth their voice. From Zoar, clear to Horonaim, to Eglath Shelishiah, for even the waters of Nimrim themselves will become mere desolations, and I will cause to cease from Moab, is the utterance of Jehovah, the one bringing up an offering upon the high place, and the one making sacrificial smoke to his God. That is why my own heart will be boisterous for Moab himself, just like flutes, and for the men of Kir-Haraz my very heart will be boisterous, just like flutes. That is why the very abundance that he has produced will certainly perish, for upon every head there is baldness, and every beard is clipped, upon all hands there are cuts, and upon the hips there is sackcloth. On all the roofs of Moab, and in her public squares, all of it there is wailing, for I have broken Moab just like a vessel in which there is no delight, is the utterance of Jehovah. Oh, how she has become terrified! Howl, you people! Oh, how Moab has turned the back! He has become ashamed. And Moab has become an object of ridicule and something terrifying to all those round about him. For this is what Jehovah has said. Look, just like an eagle that pounces, someone must also spread his wings over Moab. The towns will actually be captured, and her own strong places will certainly be seized. And the heart of the mighty men of Moab must become in that day like the heart of a wife having childbirth distress. And Moab will certainly be annihilated from being a people. For it is against Jehovah that he has put on great airs. Dread and the hollow and the trap are upon you, O inhabitant of Moab, is the utterance of Jehovah. Anyone fleeing because of the dread will fall into the hollow, and anyone coming up out of the hollow will be caught in the trap. For I shall bring upon her, upon Moab, the year of their being given attention, is the utterance of Jehovah. In the shadow of Heshbon, those fleeing have stood still without power. For a very fire will certainly go forth out of Heshbon, and the flame from the midst of Sihon, and it will devour the temples of Moab and the crown of the head of the sons of uproar. Woe to you, O Moab! The people of Chemosh have perished, for your sons have been taken as captives and your daughters as captives, and I will gather the captive ones of Moab in the final part of the days, is the utterance of Jehovah. Down to this point is the judgment upon Moab. And that's the end of Jeremiah 48. I have a feeling we have very little time. In further reply, Jesus again spoke to them with illustrations, saying, the kingdom of the heavens has become like a man. I want to lock the screen here with a little bit more brightness if we can. In further reply, Jesus again spoke to them with illustrations, saying, "The kingdom of the heavens has become like a man, a king that made a marriage feast for his son. And he sent forth his slaves to call those invited to the marriage feast, but they were unwilling to come. Again he sent forth other slaves, saying, 'Tell those invited, look, I have prepared my dinner, my bulls and fattened animals are slaughtered, and all things are ready. Come to the marriage feast.' So the first group were unwilling, but the second group, unconcerned, they went off, one to his own field, another to his commercial business. But the rest, laying hold of his slaves, treated them insolently and killed them. But the king grew wrathful and sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Then he said to his slaves, 'The marriage feast indeed is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Therefore, go to the roads leading out of the city, and anyone you find, invite to the marriage feast.' Accordingly, those slaves went out to the roads and gathered together all they found, both wicked and good. And the room for the wedding ceremonies was filled with those reclining at the table. When the king came in to inspect the guests, he caught sight there of a man not clothed with a marriage garment. So he said to him, 'Fellow, how did you get in here, not having on a marriage garment?' He was rendered speechless. Then the king said to his servants, 'Bind him hand and foot and throw him out into the darkness outside. There is where his weeping and the gnashing of his teeth will be, for there are many invited, but few chosen.' Then the Pharisees went their way and took counsel together in order to trap Jesus in his speech. So they dispatched to him their disciples together with party followers of Herod, saying, 'Teacher, we know you are truthful and teach the way of God in truth, and you do not care for anybody, for you do not look upon men's outward appearance. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay head tax to Caesar or not?' But Jesus, knowing their wickedness, said, 'Why do you put me to the test, hypocrites? Show me the head tax coin.' They brought him a denarius, and he said to them, 'Whose image and inscription is this?' They said, 'Caesar's.' Then he said to them, 'Pay back, therefore, Caesar's things to Caesar, but God's things to God.' Well, when they heard that, they marveled, and leaving him, they went off. On that day, Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came up to him and asked him, 'Teacher, Moses said, if any man dies without having children, his brother must take his wife in marriage and raise up offspring for his brother. Now there were seven brothers with us, and the first married and deceased, and not having offspring, he left his wife for his brother. It went the same way also with the second and the third, until through all seven, last of all, the woman died. Consequently, in the resurrection, to which of the seven will she be wife? For they all got her." In reply, Jesus said to them, "You are mistaken, because you know neither the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, neither do men marry, nor are women given in marriage, but are as angels in heaven. As regards the resurrection of the dead, did you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, 'I am the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob'? He is the God not of the dead, but of the living." On hearing that, the crowds were astounded at his teaching. After the Pharisees heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they came together in one group, and one of them, versed in the law, asked, testing him, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" He said to him, "You must love Jehovah your God with your whole heart and with your whole soul and with your whole mind." Verse 38, "This is the greatest and first commandment. The second, like it, is this: you must love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments the whole law hangs and the prophets." Verse 41, "Now while the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, 'What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he?' They said to him, 'David's.' He said to them, 'How then is it that David, by inspiration, calls him Lord, saying, Jehovah said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies beneath your feet. If therefore David calls him Lord, how is he his son?' and nobody was able to say a word in reply to him, nor did anyone dare from that day on to question him any further. And that concludes Matthew 22, and it concludes our Bible study for today. And we actually have 7 more minutes and some seconds now. We actually did get through the reading, but it's obviously possible, if I only read and don't talk about anything, it's possible to get through it, apparently. But comment on it. It takes a lot more time once I start making additional comments and, trying to explain the Bible text instead of just reading it. So, in our article, Crucible, there's some interesting things that we're learning. And by the way, the other day I mentioned the Ugarit. I should have called it the Ugarit solar eclipse. That's what it was called. And the Ugarit solar eclipse record, the acronym for which is USER, is something described in detail in the article Trojan War, I believe it was the article, wasn't it? Let's see here. Yeah, I'm looking at... I'm reading chapter 6 now of the article Trojan War. That chapter 6 is absolutely Institutional Moon Secured, the name of that article. This is Trojan War. I've been reading it, and chapter 6 has this fascinating discussion about the I think I finished chapter 6 actually. It's proof of the chronology that's so incredible that we have this incredible chronology. Chapter 5 is called New Irrefutable Chronological Environment, and that's an amazing chapter, really. And chapter 6 is about the moon that is a full moon corresponding to the installation of a certain Apis bull, and which all of which Apis bulls were regarded as sacred to the Egyptians, and they always installed them on a full moon, which was the 15th day of their month. It didn't matter if it was an actual astronomical full moon, but it was a religious full moon, which was on the 15th day of their month, and that's what we used as our the basis that we were able to use to determine that the chronology must be a certain chronology, because we knew there was an Apis bull installed on a certain day, a certain month, in a certain year of a certain king. And that would either prove or disprove our chronology, you know. And it completely proves or corresponds with exactly the year that it should in our chronology for it to be confirmational. And so it's so important, remarkable, because we discuss it in great detail, what the other possible days were that it could have been, what other years could it have come. There was only one other remote possibility, and it was not close, you know, it wasn't close to fitting our chronology. It wasn't something that would appear reasonable, so we didn't even have to consider that one. But the one that we did find was absolutely institutional, in the sense that it was mind-boggling. But Pi's accession year, chapter 7, that's what I've been reading now, and it's remarkable too. So many different things that we were able to find with regard to the arithmetical relationships in the years given by Manetho for different dynasties, combined with our own dates, such as year 1, 788 for Uzumari Pi. We have that year 788 that we've established as his year 1. And it's been done in such a way that all the other facts that were given by many, many different historians, including Herodotus and Manetho, particularly Manetho, because he gives so many different pieces of information, the years of the different kings, the pharaohs, that is, in the different dynasties, in Manetho's records. It's so remarkable. Oh, I can't wait to read this. But, I mean, it takes a lot of work to study it and get familiar with it. It had been several years before I read it. I mean, since I read this, after I wrote it so many years ago. Some years ago, anyway, you know, and I've just been so busy with, and, you know, what's the word? Recovering from trauma, you know, having suffered the loss of my beloved wife, it was a great shock, and I wasn't able to ever really feel comfortable or relaxed for a long time after that. And that's why, and I'm very grateful to the people who allowed me to feel that way again, because of the love that I've received from those people. And yeah, I just don't know how I could recover, right? You know, I mean, otherwise, I don't know how, but because we live in this world, we have to deal with people, and we have to have a feeling that people care about us and that we're not just alone in the world. That's the thing. It's very important. But Jehovah, of course, Jehovah and Jesus can provide us with everything we need in terms of the bare essentials, but beyond that, we need people, humans, in our lives, if we want to get anything more out of life. We do need real people. So this is interesting, because everything that we found about the chronology plus the generations of the kings and all the things that we worked out and calculated worked out extremely well. And this great discovery that was made in the case of Taharqa was, who was it? Was it Pi or was it Taharqa? Who was it who made the inscription? I think it was Pi. Pi made an inscription. Is that, maybe that's in chapter 8. Actually, is it? Let's see. Here it is. Wherever it is, it's right here. The Victor Sela, that's it. Yeah. It's chapter 7, paragraph 10 of the article Trojan War. Day 9, it was mentioned, the first month of day 9. And we drew the conclusion that it meant the year in which the first, the year in which the first, the New Year's Day fell on the first, on the first month of the inundation, which is the season, and on day 9 of that month, which is a lunar month, right? Or no, that was not a lunar month. What was it? Oh yes, that's right. We took it as a lunar month. When we took it as a lunar month, it could be the year in which Thoth 1 fell on lunar day 9. We interpreted it that way, and when we did that, we got the exact same year as we had otherwise obtained. That's all for the study. December 14th, 2023. So that goes a confirmation, very strong. December 14th, 2023 of our common era, 1612 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. And this is our beautiful watch, Gully and Cassie saying bye for now.